Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do-it-yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dollimore.
Episode 950 of Ye Old Program. I am your host, Jesse Dollimore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and as always, scholarly, Brittany Page.
So I'm embarrassed to admit this, but we're going to do it because it's kind of funny. Last time we talked about how flies were flying all around the studio, and for about a week we had a very significant fly problem. It seems to have completely gone away, or maybe it's all the contraptions that are around the studio now to catch them.
I did go on a buy-in spree of fly mitigating measures.
Yeah, so it must be working because we went through this period where seriously, we would come in the studio and there would be like more than five flies. Like we started to wonder, is there a dead animal in the wall? Like what is going on here?
Yeah.
And because you put up these various contraptions, I got caught in one of the fly contraptions. So I was sitting.
I didn't know where you were going with it. I'm glad you're admitting to this.
It was so absurd. I could not believe it happened. As soon as I did it, I was laughing my ass off. So I was sitting in a chair a distance away from a door in the studio, which had like a reflective effect happening on the glass. And I was like, oh my God, is there some like issue in the glass? Is there something wrong with the glass? Because right now we're having like other issues where many things need to be fixed. And so I'm like, is this another one of the issues that needs to be fixed? And so I slowly start making my way over, like I'm flying towards it, looking at the glossy sheen on the
I reach out my hand
and bleh, I just get stuck on this fly paper.
Yeah, I bought these stickers that are like 1x4 or like a foot by 4 inches or something.
Yeah,
12
yeah.
by 4.
Yeah.
And they are clear and mm-hmm. they adhere along the edge to the window and then they just kind of lay through static electricity mm-hmm. to the rest of the window.
Yeah.
And they are sticky.
Yeah. I found that out.
Meant to catch the flies.
Yeah, I found that out. So,
by the way, didn't work real well other than catching Brittany.
Yeah.
But the thing that did work, if you have a problem with flies, the thing that did work
yeah.
is like this night light that you plug in mm-hmm. that emits blue light. And then when you shut the lights off, mm-hmm. they're all attracted to it because it's the only light in the room.
Right.
And on the inside, there's this panel with also sticky shit where they just get trapped and then die a horrible death, I guess.
Right. Yes, so that was a nice little moment of levity before we get into the terror of it all. So briefly before we get into it, you may have noticed that we had a little bit of a break, an unplanned break between this episode and the episode previous to this one. And there's many reasons for that, and we're kind of thinking this is not an official announcement of ending the show. That's not what this is. Although we have had those conversations, we're thinking about how to change the show. Because as it stands now, and we've talked about this before, the Patreon was started primarily to support the podcast because we were only doing the podcast.
Yeah, that was all there was. There was no YouTube.
And then you started doing YouTube, and then I started doing YouTube. And those two endeavors take up a lot of our time as well. And so the Patreon has kind of become, you know, at the end of your videos, you say, support me on this channel or go to Patreon. At the end of my videos, I say, support me on this channel or go to Patreon. It's kind of become this like three-pronged support website. And we have naturally, I think, started prioritizing YouTube for many reasons, but also because it is, doing the show is a lot of work. We sit down, we plan the topics, and we're not doing it every day. So that's the other thing, is like, if we were to do it every day, that would be a lot more work, but also it would be easier to plan the topics. And, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into it, because even like, you know, we haven't done a show for a while, so I planned the topics and I'm like, well, what are we going to talk about? How far back am I going to go? How current am I going to go with what's been happening? And really, we try to choose things that we think should be prioritized in the moment, and that can be difficult to do. So all that to say, we're currently in the process of thinking about how to retool the show to make it better as the ecosystem has changed online, but also as the work that we do has changed as well. So I don't know if I'm explaining that well enough, if you want to add anything, if you feel like it's a mic drop and we're good to go.
No, I think you fucking nailed it for sure. We don't want to stop doing the show. I mean, that's why we're still doing the show. I mean, this is episode 950. This is something we enjoy. We love the connection. We love the community that's built up around the show. It's what has couriered us here. It's brought us here. And we don't want to stop it. But some tweaks absolutely need to be made. And this is where I think it would be great to throw it to the audience to get your feedback, to email us, idoubtit@dollamore.com. You can call 657-464-7609 to give us some, how would the next evolution of this show best suit you as an audience? And we want to take all that into account when this eventually does evolve to whatever it ends up being. But we love you guys. We appreciate you so much, and we want to be good stewards of this program and the community.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to end it. You know, Marc Maron recently announced that he's ending his show. And
did he really?
Yeah.
WTF, he's ending?
Yeah, and he talked at length about it when he made the announcement. And one of the things that he talked about was that it's, you know, aside from the fact that it's difficult to do something for as long as he's been doing it in the same way that he's been doing it, that there is kind of this necessity that things change in life, things change generally, and you need to be like updating the way that you're doing things. You need to be like keeping it fresh, but also there's things that may steal your priorities elsewhere. You know, there's just change that happens.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of this interesting thing to listen to it and think about how he's such a part of my routine.
Marc Maron.
Right. But that his show is going to go away, and it's okay that like things change, you know? Yeah. And it was like a nice little reminder for me, even like thinking about making changes to this show, where it's like, well, it's sad to think about doing that, but at the same time, things have changed and it's okay that things change, you know? So we would love your feedback on that. Love your ideas, reactions. idoubtit@dollamore.com or 657-464-7609. Now, we are going to be starting with a voicemail today, and this is from someone who did not leave their name, which of course means that they are anonymous.
Hey, Jesse and Brittany. I have a question, and I would like, you know, your response and maybe the audience response. How can I justify staying in this country? And I mean, even in a larger picture of Trump, so Trump's doing some crazy stuff that's awful. I'm genuinely afraid, you know, for my family long term. Because even when Democrats get back in control, they're worried about retaining power more than actually helping people, it seems like. They're more establishment, and it's, from healthcare to food stamps and welfare assistance, it's awful. And I am looking at the short term for my own life, but I'm also looking long term for my kids and my grandkids. And, you know, if I tragically pass away, how can I justify leaving them here in this country that where they will not be taken care of versus another country. So I'm just struggling with the concept of remaining here, and I, you know, like your opinion, and I would like Jesse's rage. So thanks, and Brittany's the best part.
Well,
love the show. Brittany's the best part. Bye.
If you're even... The fact that you're asking the question communicates to me that you have the ability to leave the country, which would place you in having some kind of privilege or so like the talk about welfare and food stamps and public assistance seems like it wouldn't apply to you if you actually have the ability to leave the country, or maybe you have in your, like, there's just not enough information for me, I guess. Like, do you have a connection to Canada or the UK or Mexico or some other country where you can leave?
Right, like, do you have the ability? Do you have a familial connection? Do you have the money?
Yeah,
because
I
do
don't
that?
Have, like, I don't even, like Rosie O'Donnell moved to Ireland because she's, oh, it's Rosie O'Donnell. You know, she can, that's my terrible, was that Jamaican? Was that Irish? Who fucking knows? But I don't have that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, my family is pretty deep French-Canadian roots, but
yeah.
I can't, you know.
Kentucky's waiting to welcome me back.
Right. So let me just speak generically about it, I guess. If you got to take care of your family and that's what you got to do, you go. You know what I mean? I don't think that there's, and I would obviously, as the caller solicited comments from the audience, I would ask too.
And I'm sure many people in the audience are thinking about it. I know that they are. There has been this dilemma. There was that recent New York Times video that was put out with a few of the scholars that study fascism, who, and their names are not coming to my mind right now, but that decided to
Timothy
actually...
Timothy Snyder and...
Right, yeah. That decided to actually leave preemptively before they get targeted by the Trump administration.
Luckily, they're in a position to get jobs at universities in foreign countries.
Well, and again, that it kind of, you're coming back to the theme. There's people who have the ability to leave.
Yeah.
And then there's many people who don't have the ability to leave.
Yeah, so let me use that as a jumping off point as we completely muddle the answer to the question.
Well, it's a hard thing to answer.
Yeah, fuck yeah. So I would be lying if I didn't say that we haven't talked about it, considered it, like, but it's kind of a pie in the sky thing because there's a whole bunch of moving parts to try to move out of the country, especially as an American.
They're like, we don't want you.
Yeah, we don't want you fucking here, you know? Now, we'll leave that at that. But there is this other element, and we've had conversations with friends about this, that we also need people here in the fight,
mm-hmm.
like to remain.
Right.
And if we leave, if we somehow figure out some way and to execute a plan to get out of the country, that will remove someone from the fight on the ground, but, you know, we could still use our media platform. So I don't know. I wouldn't shame it. It's not like it used to be when Alec Baldwin or whoever, it's like, if George W. Bush gets elected, I'm leaving. Like, fuck off. Yeah, fuck off. Those were different times. If someone says they're leaving or if someone leaves because of what's taking place with Donald Trump's secret police, and name another insane fucking policy, you got to do you. You got to take care of you. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in it at all whatsoever.
Yeah.
I would hope that people stay as long as they can in order to add their voice to the fight, to add their energy to the fight. But I don't, anybody who's going to try to fling some shame around needs to squelch that shit. Because people need to take care of themselves in these absolutely unprecedented, dangerous, and fucking scary times.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it is hyperbolic for people to say, I'm so afraid of what's going to happen to me that I need to leave. I don't think that that's being dramatic. And I have the same opinion. I think it's a personal choice. If you feel like what's happening right now has met the threshold for you to feel unsafe enough that you need to leave... Okay. But I also think about, like what you said, the people who can't leave and the people who are going to be hurting from these cuts to Medicaid, the cuts to food stamps. But not only that, the crackdown on immigration, and also it's not just a crackdown on immigration. I mean, we're having the Republican Party attack everything related to diversity. Mark Andreessen, this billionaire who has the ear of all kinds of Republicans, all of the people that they constantly say that hate elites, but who are actually all of the elites in our society.
Right. All the people who want to shit on college and tell your kids you don't need to go to college, who all of their kids went to college. They all went to college.
He recently called immigration and, I think, diversity discrimination against white people.
Yeah. I mean, so straight up white power talk.
So that's where we are with these people. And
I mean, we are disappearing people, kidnapping people using Donald Trump's masked secret police and then sending them off to countries on continents they've never been to.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Yeah, and again, they keep saying that they're going to go after the worst of the worst. There's a new Miami Herald report out today, an exclusive report, where they found that hundreds of immigrants with no criminal charges in the United States are being held at that compound in Florida that they're calling Alligator Alcatraz, which we're going to talk about later in the show. But there are U.S. citizens being held in these places.
Yeah.
It's genuinely...
They're straight up just saying right on TV, we don't need probable cause. Just based on your appearance, we can detain you.
Yeah, it's genuinely a scary time. And I think that's also been some of our struggle lately is we want to come on here and we want to talk about the reality of what's going on because we want to shoot people straight. But it is really scary times. And it's
emotionally taxing.
And it's difficult to come on here and talk about it and know that you guys are suffering too. I mean, we're in it just like you're in it. We know you're paying attention. We know that you guys care about this stuff. And so we also want to have like a message of hope, but we don't want to be deluded about it.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to have that balance. But for this anonymous caller, I would really invite listener participation. Have you been thinking about leaving? Have you left? We don't even know. What do you think about someone who's thinking about leaving? Should someone who's thinking about leaving leave or should they stay? What are you thinking? 657-464-7609 or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. One thing I want to promote is the upcoming Good Trouble protest that will be happening on July 17th. We're going to put the link in the show notes so you can go and click the link and see where an event is happening in your area. You can put your area code in. It is going to be taking place on a Thursday, okay? So just keep that in mind. It's July 17th this week, this Thursday, another protest for people to have the opportunity to get out in the streets and show Donald Trump that none of this is acceptable.
And remember how well the No Kings thing, I mean, Donald Trump is paying attention, absolutely. And if nothing else, you're sending a message to that douchebag that he can fuck straight off.
Well, and he's kind of run into some trouble.
Isn't that the official tagline of the... No, the Good Trouble protest?
I don't think so.
Donald Trump can fuck straight off?
Yeah, I mean, basically. He's kind of running into some trouble of his own, actually. And we should just get into this because there's some MAGA base trouble. The MAGA base is going full revolt over the Epstein files. Now, this was something that, I'll be honest with you, I didn't pay a lot of attention to because for me, it is very... conspiracy, like online conspiracy territory stuff. And so I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I'm aware of the Epstein case. I followed a lot of the reporting from the Miami Herald. We just
Julie K. Brown
read a report from them. They did great work on all that. And now what's happening is Donald Trump had made this promise. He said that he would release the Epstein files. The MAGA base really wants the Epstein files because they're obsessed and consumed by what they believe is a Democratic Party that's filled with pedophiles. And so they want these pedophiles to be exposed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Believing that the Epstein files contained a list of Jeffrey Epstein's clients who would sexually abuse children.
And it's all also kind of wrapped up in QAnon. Mm-hmm. Remember, Donald Trump is the savior of the children, and there's the storm is coming, and there was going to be this day that was almost like given kind of rapture-type Jesus coming back qualities, mm-hmm. that he was going to, there was going to be like a public tribunal and like maybe even public execute. Like, it was crazy, the thoughts that they were having, the things, the theories that they had. And now that the MAGA allowed this, Donald Trump allowed this, he fomented this, he incited all of this uproar about it. Now that it's like, oh shit, well, I'm an associate of Jeffrey Epstein. And they're not releasing the files. Now MAGA's like, whoa, wait, what? And they're starting to maybe be putting two and two together that the reason there's a cover-up is because of Donald Trump. Pam Bondi's not acting alone. She's not acting independently of Donald Trump. She's following orders here.
Yeah, so you'll also remember back in February that the White House invited 15 right-wing influencers, and they left the White House holding these binders.
Phase one, it said on the binders.
Yeah, the Epstein files, phase one, on the front of these binders. And they all came out for their little photo op holding their binders. They were all excited. They're like, we're going to get all the details. We're going to be in the know.
It really smacked of, it was like a replay of when Kayleigh McEnany gave the giant book, the giant binder of Donald Trump's healthcare plan mm-hmm. to Leslie Stahl.
Yeah, and it was empty.
And it was empty. There was nothing in it. It was very akin to that.
Or they were blank pages. So the Justice Department is saying it's not going to release any additional information related to this case. Specifically, Attorney General Pam Bondi released a memo, a two-page memo that said that her review, the department's review, turned up no client list of men who participated in Jeffrey Epstein's sex ring, that there was no credible evidence found that Epstein blackmailed prominent individuals. This has enraged Trump supporters. And what's happening is there's a fracturing in the MAGA base, one that we haven't seen for a very long time. Remember, this is a movement built on conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Donald Trump launched his career by attacking Barack Obama as not having been born in this country and wanting to see the birth certificate and all of that. They've been along for the ride on every conspiracy theory that he throws at them. So now he's saying, guys, what's it with all this Epstein stuff?
Are we still talking about this guy?
And they're like, not moving on. Normally they just fall in line with everything that he does, but they're not falling in line.
It is interesting though, when he's like, are we still talking about this guy who called Donald Trump one of his best friends for decades? Yeah, we're still talking about this guy.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting is Morning Joe put together this mashup of Donald Trump and the people that he surrounds himself with currently, people that are in his administration.
Cash Patel, Pam Bondi,
right.
Dan Bongino,
right.
The heads of the FBI and the Department of Justice.
Right. So this is a mashup of all of those various people talking about the...
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Epstein files.
The Epstein story is a big deal. Please do not let that story go.
Who has Jeffrey Epstein's
Black book.
FBI.
But who? That is,
that's under direct control of the director of the FBI.
What the hell are the House Republicans doing? They have the majority. You can't get the list? Put on your big boy pants and let us know who the pedophiles are.
Would you declassify the Epstein files?
Yeah, I would.
All right.
I guess I would. I think that less so because, you know, you don't know. You don't want to affect people's lives if it's phony stuff in there because there's a lot of phony stuff with that whole world. But I think I would.
This isn't about Epstein or 9/11 or JFK or RFK. It is, but it isn't. It's about a bigger thing. If you're lying about that, you're lying about everything. Who's on the Epstein tapes, folks? Who's on those tapes? Who's in those black books? Why have they been hiding it?
And this is something Donald Trump has talked about. The DOJ may be releasing the list of Jeffrey Epstein's clients. Will that really happen?
It's sitting on my desk right now to review. That's been a directive by President Trump.
Everything's going to come out to the public. The public has a right to know. Americans have a right to know.
So this is the perfect opportunity for Democrats to dive on this. And here's why. The first person that you heard talking in that clip and then kind of interspersed to different points throughout was Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino, who used to be a Fox News host. That's why you heard him start the clip. And he's actually considering, according to recent reporting, he's considering leaving his job after he and Pam Bondi really got into it. The person who gave an off-the-record quote is saying that he's out of control, furious that this has destroyed his career. He's threatening to quit and torch Pam Bondi unless she's fired. And a lot of these MAGA commentators are actually calling for Pam Bondi to be fired over this. So this really is the perfect opportunity for Democrats to swoop in and capitalize on what's happening with this discord in the MAGA base. Now, of course, we know, and I asked this question on Blue Sky earlier today, would MAGA actually turn on Donald Trump and believe he's a pedophile if information were released, if he were in the Epstein files?
A fraction, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's an interesting thought exercise, right? Because he has this lifelong history of sexual predation against women. Not just the tape of him talking about grabbing pussies or constantly wanting to bang Ivanka, but also being found liable by a jury of his peers for sexual abuse against E. Jean Carroll. And then, you know, all the clips like of him talking about Tiffany Trump when she was 1 year old, and the reporter asks Donald Trump, what does Tiffany have of Marla's? And he motions to his chest and says, we don't know yet if she has her tits, basically. Like, what? Who says that about their one-year-old infant child?
Well, remember, he also said that the thing that he and Ivanka have most in common is sex.
Right, they like to have sex. So this is like a disturbed person, and they never cared about any of that.
Well, I think some of it's they never cared because they don't know. I think a lot of them are siloed off from Donald Trump's actual disgusting, vile sexualizing of his own children. I think a lot are.
Yeah, well, I read this interesting paragraph from someone named Brian Butler, and I don't know who that is, but he wrote, it would be completely in bounds for Democrats to insist on bringing Bondi and Patel in to answer questions publicly under oath. Were you lying then, or are you lying now? If you were lying then, why did you think it was fair game to exploit allegations of child rape for political gain? Why do you deserve to hold public office? If you're lying now, what are you covering up? The question of who gets summoned is ultimately up to Republicans, but they can be placed under immense pressure, both by tying them to a cover-up and by making the basic functioning of Congress contingent on Republican cooperation with a real Epstein investigation. If Chuck Schumer were to say no unanimous consent for anything until Republicans stop the Epstein cover-up, the heat would probably become unbearable.
Yeah.
And now is really the time to do this.
Yeah, and also, let me say this. If there's other people on the list, if there is a list, and they're Democrats, oh, then fucking burn them to the ground. Anybody involved in this nonsense, in these crimes against children, should be fucking burned to the ground.
Yeah. So now we also have the attacks on immigrants in this country from Tom Homan. He recently went on and made headlines because he essentially said that people need to understand that ICE and Border Patrol, that they don't need probable cause. They can just walk up to somebody that they think looks like an undocumented immigrant, which again,
whatever the fuck that means.
So right, that asks the question, what does an American look like?
Yeah.
What does a citizen look like, Tom?
That's exactly right.
What are you saying about that? How can you tell just by looking at someone? I wonder what you're getting at. Oh, but don't talk about how anyone's Nazis, guys. It's going too far.
Right.
Don't talk about that. So here he is. We're going to play his first comment, and then we're going to play him trying to clean up his comment.
I've got to get your reaction to this Biden-appointed federal judge out in Los Angeles, apparently expected today to issue a temporary restraining order halting your lawful operations. She says, I think it's important for the court not to burden otherwise lawful law enforcement activities. Your reaction there.
Look, people need to understand, ICE officers and Border Patrol, they don't need probable cause to walk up somebody, briefly detain them, and question them. They just need this. So totality of the circumstances, right? They just got through the observation, you know, get articulable facts based on their location, their occupation, their physical appearance, their actions. Like a uniformed border police walks up to them at for instance, a Home Depot. And they got all these articulable facts, plus the person walks away or runs away. Mm-hmm. You know, agents are trained. What they need to detain somebody temporarily and question them. It's not probable cause, it's reasonable suspicion. We're trained on that. Every agent, every 6 months, gets Fourth Amendment training over and over again. These officers are really good at what they do. And if the judge make a decision that's against what these officers are trained, what the law is based upon, then they're going to shut down operation. I think that's your end game. They want ICE to stop mm-hmm. doing this. But if they base it on the rule of law, they're going to find out yep. Border Patrol and ICE is doing exactly what they're going to do in accordance with law.
And you're not going to stop coming. Tom Homan, thank you for getting up with us this morning.
I love giving these people as much rope as we can give them. And they feel very comfortable on right-wing media. This was a Fox News clip. And, of course, he feels so comfortable that he's just given up the game. Mm-hmm. Saying, as a career law enforcement person who should have some cursory understanding of the Constitution, of the Fourth Amendment to our Constitution, prohibiting illegal search and seizure, that he's like, wow, we don't need probable cause. If you're brown, that's good enough. If you're speaking a language other than English, that's good enough. Your appearance is enough to usurp your constitutional rights. Wild. And then when he got pushed back on it, it's a whole different tune about, let me be clear. You were very clear the first time, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's hard to fully cover everything that is disgusting about this because there's so many attacks happening left and right constantly. Yeah. But Florida also recently, along with the alligator Alcatraz thing, they granted patrol officers, highway patrol officers, the ability to detain drivers based on their immigration status during routine traffic stops. And so now what's happening is people are afraid to have foreign flags or Spanish language stickers or advertisements on their vehicle.
I've even heard people talk about not listening to Spanish language radio.
That's exactly right.
Like country music and shit. They'll play instead of what they actually listen to.
Right. They also are, immigrants are now afraid to wear certain clothing, like yeah. if they are housekeepers or if they're landscapers or they're working a construction job, they don't want to be dressed in those uniforms
right.
because they think that that's going to flag to a highway patrol officer to pull them over and harass them. And so think, if you aren't having to live with this right now, think of having to live with that in your day-to-day life.
Constant terror.
It's constant terror.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. It's so horrifying. If you have the ability to get out on the streets this week, please, please do so. But let's hear from Tom Homan now, trying to clean up what he very obviously believes and very obviously promotes.
Let's talk about that reasonable suspicion and what it actually means on the ground when it comes to ICE detaining people. You said in an interview this week that reasonable suspicion can be based on, quote, the location, their occupation, their physical appearance, their actions. What about an...
First of all, I'm gonna pause here. This is a failure on the part of Dana Bash and CNN.
Oh, every day.
Because they're not talking about reasonable suspicion, Dana. They're talking about probable fucking cause. Vastly different things. And then she's teeing up the question in a way that allows him to try to evade his previous statements. They weren't talking about suspicion in the previous clip. They were talking about probable cause.
Individual's physical appearance would give immigration agents, quote, reasonable suspicion that they might be in the U.S. illegally.
Well, first of all, let me be clear. Physical description can't be the sole factor to give you reasonable suspicion. As I said in an interview, it's articulable facts with an S. So appearance can be just one. For instance, mm-hmm. if someone has an MS-13 tattoo on their face, that may be one factor to add to other factors to raise reasonable suspicion. I want to be clear about that again because my words are taken out of context. Physical description cannot be the sole reason to detain and question somebody. that can't be the sole reason to raise reasonable suspicion. It's a myriad of factors, and I can sit here for the next half hour and give you all the factors. Mm-hmm. So every officer, every situation is different, but I can tell you this, every ICE officer goes through Fourth Amendment training every 6 months and reminded what their authorities are for arrest, detention, and questioning. So the officer very well trained. So I look forward to DOJ litigating this judge's decision, because I think she's making a decision while knowing what that officer knows when they get out of that vehicle to question somebody.
So what that judge, same judge in the case, said is that an individual's race or ethnicity, the language they speak or their accent, their presence at a particular location like a bus stop or a work site, or the type of work they do, does not qualify as reasonable suspicions.
Well, like I said, these are factors that lead to reasonable suspicion. There's a myriad of factors. Every case is different. I'm not going to disagree with everything the judge has said, because, you know, a location alone shouldn't have reasonable suspicion. It's a combination of articulable facts that an officer determines before he, detains somebody for a short period of time and questions them. So, again, every case is different, articulable facts for different people in different places. Yep. So, I look forward to litigation. I think we will win this on appeal.
Okay, so obviously you're appealing, but until that happens, the administration will comply with the judge's order?
The administration is never going to go against the judge's order. We'll litigate it, we'll win it, okay. Then we'll get back to doing what we're doing.
And she just says, okay.
Right.
When the history so far of the Trump administration, has that been obeying court orders?
Yeah, they've ignored the Supreme Court of the United States. Get the fuck out of here.
And she just says, okay, and moves on. So this is the other frustrating thing about the media, is that for some reason these people are still given the benefit of the doubt, as though they're not just constantly lying and constantly violating people's human rights.
I mean, this is Nazi shit.
Tom Homan is overseeing a law enforcement apparatus that is rounding people up and violating their rights every hour of every day across the country, and putting them in horrific conditions where they don't have access to food and water and cleaning themselves.
Personal space.
And she's like, and so the administration will be obeying the court orders, correct?
This is just a normal time in American history. Yes, Let me ask you a question.
We will be obeying.
Listen, I don't want to get petty, but it is kind of my default. I call him the mushmouth dildo with ears on YouTube. That guy, dude, slow down. And talking about trying to pronounce the word articulable, how about you trying to be articulate for a fucking second, guy?
So the other thing that happened this week is that Democratic lawmakers visited the so-called alligator Alcatraz in Florida. And what was remarkable about this is you had Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was one of the lawmakers who went to visit, and her statement about what she saw there. I don't know if everyone saw this or heard this. I want to make sure everyone has the opportunity to hear what Debbie Wasserman Schultz saw at Alligator Alcatraz.
Again, I'm Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I'm a member of Congress. I represent Florida's 25th Congressional District, South Broward, a little bit of North Broward, the port and the seaport. What we saw, the conditions that we saw inside this internment camp, which it is nothing less than that description, were really appalling. I'll walk you through just a few of the really egregious, disturbing, disgusting conditions. First of all, I want to talk about the establishment of this facility and make it very clear that we were directly told that the state was asked by the Department of Homeland Security to create a facility to detain ICE detainees. The governor decided directly, the governor directed FDEM, the Florida Division of Emergency Management, to put that facility they were requested to create by DHS here. But to put it anywhere, they decided to put it in the middle of the most brutal conditions, in the middle of a swamp in the Everglades. Let's be clear, throughout this entire tour, it was repeated over and over that the state is working hand in glove with ICE. This facility was inspected by ICE. They review their detention standards. They are using cages. These detainees are living in cages. The pictures that you've seen don't do it justice. They are essentially packed into cages, wall-to-wall humans, 32 detainees per cage. That is the only thing inside those cages are their bunk beds, and there are three tiny toilets that are toilet units that have a sink attached to it. So they essentially drink. They get their drinking water and they brush their teeth where they poop in the same unit.
You know, I'm always struck by is that when all of this is over and the Hague comes a-calling, or, you know, whatever aftermath that we find ourselves, imagine all the people who are going to say, I was just following orders. All of these fucking ghouls, these Nazi fucks who work for Homeland Security, who work in this particular concentration camp. They're just going to say, I was just following orders. Look, I didn't have any role to play in the policy. I was just doing what I was told. It's not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an excuse.
Yeah, it's very disgusting and disturbing and horrifying. And like I said, the new Miami Herald reporting that's out today, that hundreds of people that are being held here have no criminal charges.
Right. No due process. Most of these people have not gone through due process to prove the allegations against them. They're right. Just rounded up, kidnapped, and thrown into cages.
Right, and oftentimes not able to even contact their attorneys or contact family members. There was a recent report, I think, of a congresswoman in Oregon who went to try to find a family that had disappeared, and she ended up finding them, and the family is in custody, and they have been there for like 2 weeks. They haven't been able to call their attorney. They haven't been able to let anyone know where they are. And as a part of that family, there's like four U.S. citizen children that are being held as well. So it's disgusting. It's horrifying. Again, it's lawless. They're violating human rights. And I have a lot more to say, but I'm going to leave it at that. How about that?
Before you get yourself in trouble?
Just before I go off the deep end, okay? So we also want to talk about this recent, you know, we talk about the media a lot because the show is so much of us listening to media packages, listening to different media packages, different framing of stories and things like that. And of course, we had Paramount recently settle with Donald Trump to the tune of $16 million in Donald Trump's lawsuit over a 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris that he said was deceptively edited. And as a part of that lawsuit, I think that they were not going to apologize. Like, there were certain parameters that were put in place. But the optics of it still, paying Donald Trump $16 million, the people who work for Paramount, which oversees CBS Evening News, 60 Minutes. The reporters who work for these various organizations are outraged by this, and some of them are making it known on the air. One of those was John Dickerson.
Paramount Global, the parent company of CBS News, settled a suit with President Trump today. Journalists don't like to report on themselves. Sometimes that's false humility. Mostly it's a practical limitation. Reporters try to find order in chaos. We prefer to explain the cause of a bombing, the intent of a bill, the marvel of a new discovery. Putting chaos in preliminary order helps viewers make sense of their world. They tell us this at airports, restaurants, at church. The audience brings us their fears, their questions, their good faith view of things. It reminds us that we are stewards of that concern. It's a grace to receive another's trust, but also to have a mission that shapes your work. Mission, that can sound grandiose. We are not all that. Public figures have taught us that misguided mission can do more harm than brute force. We pride ourselves on our BS detector, so it ought to work on ourselves, too. When it doesn't, the stakes are real. A loss of public trust, the spread of misinformation. A visitor to our newsrooms might wonder why we debate a single word for so long. Why it takes hours to answer the simple question, what is this story about? why there's a cry of frustration when a detail is off by an inch. That is what work looks like when it is deeply felt, when the audience's concerns become ours, passed by bucket brigade from the subjects of our stories to correspondents, to producers, to editors, fact-checkers, and writers. The obstacles to getting it right are many. The Paramount settlement poses a new obstacle. Can you hold power to account after paying it millions? Can an audience trust you when it thinks you've traded away that trust? The audience will decide that. Our job is to show up, to honor what we witness on behalf of the people we witness it for. The network's first heroes ran to rooftops during the bombing of London. Its current ones carry that same instinct. But another story from CBS's early days also captures this spirit. A young correspondent was filing a story when it started to rain. The takes they'd already filmed were fine. Everybody could have just gone inside. But she persisted, the rain turning the notes in her hand to pulp. Again and again, she worked to get it right. This wasn't London under the fire. It was just a regular story. That's the point. So the rain has picked up. But we'll stay at it. We hope you will, too.
He's right about one thing, and that's, you know, CBS, ABC, CBS, CNN should be viewed with some suspicion now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say that every journalist that works for these organizations is bad at all. In fact, I think most of the people who work for these organizations do very good work. But it comes down to what their editorial standards are. It comes down to what their values are. It comes down to what they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And they have displayed fear of Donald Trump. And it's going to color how they cover things.
Yeah,
it's why independent media is so goddamn important in this particular time in American history.
Yeah. And yeah, I have so much to say. I'm just not going to say it. Okay, so... There's just so many problems.
Yes.
You know, there's just a lot of problems, guys. Okay, so.
What do you think? 657-464-7609. And you can also email a voice memo or a regular email to idoubtit@dollemore.com.
So, of course, the Donald Trump passed his tax and spending bill, and it's going to have a horrific impact on the working class. They just passed $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid, and there's going to be other health policy changes that are going to devastate millions of people. And one aspect of this is, even though the messaging seems to have been relatively effective in terms of the polls that show that the vast majority of Americans felt negatively about that bill.
Yeah.
A lot of the effects of this bill are unfortunately not going to hit people until after the midterms.
By design. The Republicans did that by design so they could get away with it.
Well, obviously, a big piece of legislation like this does take some time to be implemented, so this is no exception. But we do expect, for instance, with respect to the president's 2017 tax cuts being extended, that transition will likely take place in terms of that extension at some point this year. Obviously, those tax cuts were due to expire at the end of this year, so they will kick in at some point in the near term. But what will take a bit longer to implement will be some of those changes that we were talking about over many months with respect to Medicaid and SNAP, for instance. With respect to Medicaid, obviously the big change in this bill is implementing work requirements. Those will be phased in at the end of next year, 2026. Lawmakers had actually pushed that date out further, but to win some more support, they moved that up to 2026. Some of the changes to SNAP could take even longer.
And one interesting point you made on Friday, Nicole, was that because it will take so long for the SNAP cuts, for the Medicaid cuts to hit, it may actually be felt after the midterm elections. But both Republicans and Democrats have pledged to campaign in the next year on this bill. So what will we likely see as far as messaging?
Wait. Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously, you know, the midterms are kind of off and running unofficially in earnest, and we certainly expect both Republicans and Democrats to litigate arguments both for and against this new law. But what I would note with respect to, even though those Medicaid cuts will start taking effect at the end of 2026, keep in mind states are going to have to start working on that now. I mean, that was part of the issue. You know, they had pushed that date for implementation out to, I believe it was 2029, to give states time to get up to speed. Now they're going to have to move a lot quicker. So even though they kick in after the midterms, the work to get there will be happening while lawmakers are campaigning again, both for and against this package.
Yeah, and viewers can just read the bill for themselves so they know if you've got 900 pages you don't mind skimming through, you'll know what's up. Nicole, thank you so much. Great to see you this Monday.
You bet.
I mean, I know it's hard to fill time, but really? So a few of these specific examples, one of them is the so-called, quote unquote, abled body recipients on Medicaid ages 19 to 64. They're not going to be dropped from Medicaid for failure to meet or properly report their required 80 hours a month until after November 2026. So this is like a specific example of what we're talking about here. With this not necessarily taking place for a while. So there's going to be this period where people aren't necessarily going to be able to draw a direct impact to, oh, that tax and spending bill that everyone was talking about that was going to throw millions of people off Medicaid and off food assistance and vastly explode the police state. We haven't necessarily been feeling the effects of that yet. Until it's too late.
Until after November
right.
of 2026. What happens? What is it that happens in November of 2020? I fucking wonder.
Yeah, so of course, another element of that is that it's intentional. But the one nice thing about this is some of these Republicans in Donald Trump's administration are so terrible at lying. And one of them is the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent.
Ugh.
And what's funny about that is I heard Donald Trump today during his like holy meeting or whatever he was doing, his like prayer, whatever. And he was talking about when Scott Bessent goes on the air, he calms the markets. And then when Donald Trump goes on the air, he creates chaos in the markets. And I thought, really? Him?
The Tax Policy Center says the majority of the tax benefits will go to Americans making $217,000 or more a year. The Yale Budget Lab says the richest Americans will see their income rise by nearly 2%. The lowest earning Americans will see their income drop by 3% when factoring in cuts to Medicaid and food stamps. You argue that the benefits will really be aimed at the middle class. How does that square?
Dana, first, let's have a look at the Yale Budget Lab, because I was looking at their findings, and this week I actually went on their website. They're all ex-Biden officials, so I think we can discount everything they say. I'd encourage all your viewers to look at the composition of both the board and the staff, and it's just not right that...
And so should we discount what Scott Bessent says because he's worth over $500 million? So
and also used to work for George Soros.
So he can't objectively speak to whether or not this bill harms the poor and working class and benefits the wealthiest Americans. Should he maybe tap this one, sit this one out?
Are you trying to do an Arrested Development thing here earlier? And now you're doing the shoo 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 shoo.
No, I'm just naturally.
You're like her?
Yeah.
Shall we let him continue?
Yes.
He's very articulate.
Unfortunately.
What we have here is a middle class and working class bill that we are going to see wages accelerate, and we are going to see, just as we saw with President Trump's first tax bill, we are making permanent these tax cuts. And what happened in 2017, 2018 was the highest wage earners went from paying 37% of all taxes to 45%. So that's going to be permanent now. So permanently, the highest 10% will pay a higher percent of the taxes.
I should say that taking the Yale Budget Lab aside, there are Republican senators who are worried about affordability and who this all is going to affect.
Look, I think affordability, safety, and growth are the three things this bill is going to generate.
One of the tax
cuts that are in here are for, and the president talks about them a lot, are on tips and overtime. Mm-hmm. Those are temporary. Why not make those permanent? They're only 2025 to 2028.
This is a big part of President Trump's agenda. So, you know, we have what I call parallel prosperity here, that Wall Street has done great. Now it's time for working Americans to do great.
Oh,
and you know, this is President Trump's agenda, so we've got it in for the duration of his term. And we will see if the next administration wants to do that.
What? So Donald Trump only wants to help Americans when he's president, and after he's president, fuck you? That's what Scott Bessent just said.
Yeah. And also, listen, you can say whatever you want to say about the Yale Budget Lab. You shouldn't discount them because of their political affiliation.
Well, he's not discounting their findings. He's discounting that they're Democrats.
Yeah, because again, the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan office, which is led by a Republican.
Yeah.
Who has Republican trinkets behind him in his office that he loves to talk about during his interviews with CNBC. They found that the bottom 10% of households are going to lose $1,600 a year on average, and the top 10%, top 10% wealthiest households are going to gain $12,000 or 2.3% of their income on average. So that's the CBO, led by a Republican who loves his Republican trinkets in his office.
Yeah.
Okay. So Scott Bessent, although it was rubbing off on Dana Bash a little bit too, the herky jerky nature of the responding.
Yeah, she's not great.
So we would love to know what you think. 657-464-7609 or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We are thinking of everyone in Texas because, of course, the horrific flooding that happened in Texas. And there's been many things that are enraging about it. I mean, we could talk about Kristi Noem going and talking about how she's just grateful to God for saving hundreds of lives.
Yeah, John Cornyn was like, they're like, yeah, look, 36 kids are dead. He goes, yeah, but what about all the kids that aren't dead? I mean, that's ultimately that's all they fucking got.
Well, and their responses to questions from reporters about why there weren't advanced warnings, why there has been a failure here. They're saying that it's hateful to ask those questions.
Yeah, Donald Trump said, you're a bad person if you ask me that question. You're an evil person to even ask if there was enough warning given prior for citizens and people to get out of the way.
Right. But there was an interview conducted on CNN with Pamela Brown with the Kerrville mayor, who actually talked about how they did not have an advanced warning to get people out.
I, as you heard me in the press conference, was asking about the coordination between county officials, emergency managers, and National Weather Service. Were you involved in any discussions leading up to the deadly flooding about the concerns with the weather and potential evacuations or activating any plans?
I am not an emergency manager. I did check the weather that night. I went to the National Weather Service website. They said we had a slight chance of about 2 to 4 inches in the morning of July 4th.
Is it 5 to 7, right?
My memory is 2 to 4, but I'm an older person. And being a hill country boy, I went outside and looked at the sky. Partly cloudy, the sky was not angry. And I thought to myself, someone's going to get rain, but it's probably not going to be us. And I was wrong. I was awakened in the middle of the night by thunder. I looked outside. We had a light rain. In fact, the city of Kerrville really didn't have a lot of rain until later in the day. It all happened upriver at the worst possible place. And I think everyone in Kerrville, everyone in Kerr County, wishes to God we'd had some way to warn them.
If we even know the outside consequences of this geoengineering,
to warn those people,
if we can't predict the weather next week, how can you then be sending these guys up there to do this?
I've lost two friends.
The ramifications or the outcomes. I think that's
we left.
It is. It's kind of frustrating to get one answer to that.
And they're gone.
It definitely needs to be asked.
You know, they're gone. Everyone here, if we could have warned them, we would have done so. And we didn't even have a warning. We did not know.
You didn't know how severe?
No.
I'm so sorry for the loss of your friends.
We did not know. There was no. When I checked it about 8 o'clock that night, there's a chance of rain. But I did not see a flood warning. I did not receive a flood notification. I did not know.
And this absolutely is not what the narrative that the Republican Party wants out there, for sure. Mm-hmm. Pamela Brown, in fact, has a personal connection to this. Pamela Brown went to Camp Mystic as a child, mm-hmm. the same camp that was flooded and all of those children were killed. It's absolutely horrific, the look the other way antics from the Republican Party trying to do anything other than just take responsibility for mistakes that were made in order to correct those mistakes so they don't happen again in the future. If you can't admit that there were problems, then those problems won't be addressed because they didn't exist, according to Republicans.
Well, in my theory, the reason that they are not willing to entertain questions about what the issue is because it fundamentally comes back to the Trump administration's priorities of gutting weather service funding and disaster response funding.
Yeah. And NOAA, the National Weather Service, and emergency notification systems.
Right. I mean, even I think it was either the day or the day after this happened, a reporter asked Trump about FEMA. You remember Trump's been wanting to get rid of FEMA, and he actually responded like this.
Are you still planning to phase out FEMA?
Well, FEMA is something we can talk about later, but right now they're busy working, so we'll leave it at that. Go ahead.
And that's it.
So they seem necessary then, if they're busy working because of the tragedy and the flood in Texas.
Yeah.
Then it seems like actually maybe we don't want to get rid of FEMA. Is that right? Because they're doing something important right now. Is that right, Donald Trump? And again, shutting down questions when more than 130 people are dead. And by the way, 17 minutes ago on ABC News, they're saying heavy rain hinders search efforts again. They've had to pause their search efforts again because of the heavy rain in the area.
Yeah, they had to evacuate the areas in which they're searching for to recover bodies.
And they lost most of their search day on Sunday because of heavy rains.
Yeah.
So this is an ongoing search for dead bodies. And you have Donald Trump refusing to take responsibility for it. And same thing with Christine Ohm. She was just all over the Sunday shows refusing to take responsibility. And it's again, an enduring pattern of this administration. We also had Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins, who made some comments that recently made headlines because, as we talked about, there's going to be all these cuts to Medicaid. They're going to put work requirements and red tape on people in order to maintain the Medicaid requirements. There's been this question of, okay, the Trump administration is going after immigrants who are, in some cases, working on farms across the country. And if you are rounding up people that are farm workers, who is going to take those jobs?
I saw photos this morning of row upon row upon row upon row upon row upon row of rotting tomatoes in fields of farmers because there's no one there to pick those crops.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have an economic, a ripple effect in our economy that is, one, not the most important thing at all. The actual damage to human life and human rights is the biggest thing. But this is going to reverberate out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what they're trying to do now to counter the removal, the kidnapping of workers who do these jobs and replace them. And where are they going to find that? Where are they going to find those replacements?
Well, apparently they have a plan.
But I can't underscore enough, there will be no amnesty. The mass deportations continue, but in a strategic way, and we move the workforce towards automation and 100% American participation, which again, with 34 million people, able-bodied adults on Medicaid, we should be able to do that fairly quickly. Thank you.
34 million people from the Medicaid rolls are going to be forced to work in the fields, says Brooke Rollins, to justify, to earn their health care.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nazi shit. Again.
Yeah, and some people are still, again, it's the same thing, right? There's some people that are uncomfortable using that word. There were people that were uncomfortable talking about fascism, that fascism was too strong of a word. And again, in this larger context of the media, I would invite everyone to think about the media that they have consumed over the past 2 years.
Right.
And what the commentators that you've listened to over the past 2 years have been saying about the threat of a Donald Trump administration.
Yeah, seriously, if you were listening to Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian make excuses for Donald Trump and act like, well, Donald Trump disavowed Project 2025, guys. He said it.
Right.
Let's not be alarmists. Well, it looks like the alarmists were fucking right.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like we were right. It looks like you out there were right about this. So those people who acted the way they did and were wrong when the writing was on the wall, don't reward them with continuing to consume their content.
Yes, that is something
they're not credible.
That is something I would definitely recommend. And it's not to toot our own horn, okay? Because it's not as though we've gotten everything right.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there who were right because it was so clear that we were right.
Right, and it's just very, it's disheartening, really. And it makes me sad because I know people personally that I had a lot of respect for that I thought were really intelligent thinkers who downplayed the threat of Donald Trump before the election. And I'm thinking specifically of like white leftists that I know who downplayed the threat of Donald Trump before the election and who have nothing at stake right now. Their families are not being rounded up. They don't have family members who are afraid to play the music that they like to listen to in right. their vehicle. And they are not out in the streets. And yet they contributed to discord before the election. And so it's very disheartening to be in this position when so much was at stake and now we're seeing all this come to fruition. So I would just really invite people to think critically about the media commentators that they follow and what they've been saying. We want to end with a story about a man who was recently pardoned for the January 6th insurrection. And there's actually an important project that I'm going to link to if you want to support it in the show notes. It's called Pardon Tracker, and it's an independent investigative journalism and data visualization project. And they document the people who have been pardoned by Trump to figure out what they're up to. And this is important because, as you may or may not be surprised to learn, many of these people who were pardoned by Donald Trump during the insurrection, for the insurrection, are up to no good, including one who just got life in prison for plotting to incite a civil war and attack FBI agents.
According to the Department of Justice, it was during the investigation of Edward Kelly's role in January 6th that he began targeting the FBI agents and the FBI overall that were part of the investigation into him. This began in 2022, according to the U.S. Department of Justice, that there was some type of plotting, amassing of resources, if not a plan and a way to execute the plan to target federal agents. They call it conspiracy for murder. So Edward Kelly, who was pardoned on January 20th for his role in the U.S. Capitol insurrection, now faces a life prison term for what he did while under investigation for the U.S. Capitol insurrection. There has been, as this week ends, no pardon for Edward Kelly in this separate case, which is being prosecuted in the Eastern District of Tennessee.
How many other people who were pardoned by the president have since faced new criminal investigations, Scott?
Oh, there have been some, including one who was arrested just days later on a gun charge, and another, a Texas man, who was actually freed from prison because of the pardon, not just having his slate clear, but was actually released from the prison gates, who was later charged with child solicitation. That's what's happened so far. But one of the warnings that Justice Department officials gave during the Biden administration was that if there are pardons, these are people with a history of recidivism, of criming again after they get released, and we're seeing that play out already here in 2025.
And this particular dipshit who just got life in prison for plotting the FBI agents, plotting against the FBI agents who investigated him, he contends that his original pardon covers this crime too.
Right.
So they think we're just like Donald Trump. We're completely immune from consequences for all of our crimes against the country.
Well, and it's something we warned about, actually, after they got pardoned, is that they would become emboldened
yeah.
and commit other acts of violence. And here we are. So it's very scary.
Donald Trump, I believe, pardoned them to keep them in the wings, armed, furious, and in the wings for when he needs them again, because he may need them. And they will answer the call, I think.
Yeah. On another note, something else that you want to track is what these MAGA influencers are saying about Jeffrey Epstein, because Donald Trump has been on the phone giving them some calls, calling some of them, trying to get them to stop it with all of the anger.
Right,
and
with,
try
with
to
the influencers.
Yeah, smooth things over with their audiences so that the fury stops coming for him. And Charlie Kirk just came out and said that he's done talking about Epstein for the time being, and he's going to trust my friends in the administration.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's what's getting exciting is, are people going to say, all right, guys, let's lay off. Let's follow Charlie Kirk's advice. Let's trust the administration is doing the right thing. Or are they going to say, oh, Charlie, you're the problem too, are you?
Right.
Are you on the Epstein list?
Fucking deep state plant. We got you now, bro.
Where's it going to end up?
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out.
We're going to leave you there. We love you. Appreciate you. I want to hear from you. 657-464-7609. Of course, you can email idoubtit@dollamore.com. We would ask you to consider supporting this work, helping us produce this show. We want to hear from you about the next iteration, how this show evolves. We do want to hear what you feel about that and what you would like to see. We love you, we appreciate you, and we will see you next time, episode 951. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt It.